Take ORFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and streaming of primo local content. Download the accessmedia.nz app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of issues every week as seen through the lens of sustainability. It is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, where all students learn how to make their industries more sustainable. It is hosted by Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher, and joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene. Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Broadcast every week on Otago Access Radio and podcast on sustainablelens.org and on oar.org.nz.
Welcome to Sustainable Lens. I'm Samuel Mann, and I'm not joined by Shane Gallagher, who is promising that he is only 5 minutes away. So I'm driving until Shane turns up. Thank you for joining us. I'm joined today by Zach Rudin, who is a representative of the School Strike for Climate Dunedin. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, I normally start these by asking people where they grow up, but I kind of know that, but other people don't know that, so I'll ask it anyway.
Yeah, sure. I was born in Nelson. I spent quite a few years in Auckland before moving to Dunedin mainly, and I spent the past 6 or 7 years here in Dunedin. Yeah.
And you've just finished school?
Yeah. So uni next year. Well, this year, I should say. I keep thinking next year, but it's really this year.
What are you going to do?
I'm planning on studying law and politics. Yeah. So my focus would be getting into either human rights or environmental law eventually. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Why law and politics?
Well, I guess I feel like at my current level, like I feel almost a little bit helpless with the state of the world, the way things are now. So I guess there's part of me that wants to make some real profound change and try to change the systems from within. Yeah, but I don't know. Things could change until then. I'm not fully set on law because it does look like quite a drain, and a number of people I've talked to about it have said that it is quite a push, especially in second year and so forth when you have to wade through things like property law and all of that. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so there's quite a bit to unpack in there. Goodness. Why do you feel helpless?
I don't know. With the whole School Strike for Climate movement last year, it was incredible and it was super empowering. But simultaneously, I did have this nagging feeling, like, and as Greta Thunberg has phrased it quite recently, like, from a certain perspective, we have essentially achieved nothing. We have gained huge, profound support on a global level from the general public. But at the same time, you see, like, world leaders like Boris Johnson being re-elected and Trump, of course, and just like the rise of the alt-right and this immense hatred and this immense level of climate denial on a global scale, which is quite demoralizing, I guess. And so, yeah, from a certain kind of individualistic position, it's quite difficult.
But none of those things are your fault.
No. No, definitely not. But it's just kind of confronting to like be to feel like that you're up against like this huge immense status quo that doesn't seem to budge, and it feels like there's things that you can do and things that you can try to do, but it's very difficult.
And we're joined by Shane Gallagher. I'm going to say that before he sits down so we can get him to get even more flustered than he already is. Would you like a microphone on? Let's have three.
Yeah, that'd be good. Hey, how are you going? Thank you. Sorry.
We're just talking about Zach feeling helpless.
All right.
Do you think he should feel helpless?
No, because I think the climate change march was really, really powerful. The climate strike, I mean, So I was on the march representing the university council, in fact, and that's the kind of the leading body of the university. So that's the vice chancellor, the chancellor, all the people who kind of basically, you know, look into the distant future about how the university is supposed to look like, you know, how it's run and the strategic direction of the university. So they felt it was very, very important that the university was represented in that strike to show solidarity with our students, because we're really focused on young people and we're focused on the future. And one of the big projects for the 150th anniversary for the university was a Sustainable Futures project. And that's raising funding at the moment. And the purpose of that project is to be a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary center that will basically address all the problems that we're facing right now, and to have the best minds and all the resources of the of our best minds and research focus on trying to solve this problem. And so what the school strikes have done has pushed the agenda for climate change to the very front of the agenda. And I think it's really timely when we see the fires in Australia, and we've seen the floods in Malaysia, and we're seeing all the effects that climate change is having, and the biodiversity loss, that it was just timely. I mean, far too late. I mean, we should have been doing this back in the 90s, back when we were, you know, when I was at uni. Well, both of us were at uni. But, I mean, we were trying back then, but there just wasn't the momentum, and now I think there's an urgency about it. And so I think, don't feel helpless, because helplessness means that you can't fall into despair. You are actually making a huge impact, even though you possibly haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I do agree with you on that point. But yeah, at the same time, it's kind of an ongoing battle, it has been for myself and for the other school strikers, just in terms of like the angst we've been feeling, and just kind of a level of like cognitive dissonance within us, in terms of like wanting to create some real profound change, but then obviously just the way our lifestyles are structured, it's impossible to avoid using fossil fuels just in everyday life. It's just so heavily ingrained within everything in that. So detaching from that and so forth. And also just, yeah, I guess it just really is quite demoralizing just seeing the state of the world now with the Australian bushfires, and then a huge number of people are simply blaming the problem on arsonists and so forth, and not actually realizing that this is a problem which is fueled scientifically by the issue of the climate crisis. Because as global temperatures increase, we're experiencing more arid conditions and more frequent extreme weather events. And this has been labeled kind of as the new norm, but I've heard from, in terms of climate scientists, are saying this isn't the new norm. This is actually essentially the tipping point in which things are starting to dramatically increase in magnitude, and that's an exponential increase. So it's not so stationary as people think.
Yeah. It's interesting you talked about you being aware of the contradiction of the fact that you're using fossil fuels in the way that we're living, because it's very much the gotcha that the skeptics throw at them. You know, all these kids marching up, but I bet you they were using their phones, and mummy and daddy drove them there in their petrol driven car, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And the way that they say that with such righteousness, as if nobody else thought of it. But you're very aware of that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there's always going to be that level of hypocrisy within our current system as things stand. And there can't not be until we change the system, because that's something that not many people think of. They think of how we can change ourselves and how we can be more consumer friendly, or not consumer, but like use our consumer lifestyles to be more environmentally friendly. But whereas in reality, if we want to stand any chance at turning this situation around at this super, super late stage as it is, we have to focus on the systems at play, and the industrial capitalist systems that are essentially driving the fossil fuel industry.
So how many matches did you do? Was it just about matches, or did you do other things?
Well, we did 3 major strikes over the course of the last year. It was March 15th, May 24th, and September 27th. We also did more little things in between those times. Obviously, organizing and preparing for those strikes was immensely time-consuming. We were meeting pretty much... There was a group of 4 of us, myself, Linnea Simons, Finn McKinley, and Abe Bailey, all year 13s last year at Logan Park High School. And we were meeting pretty much every day to discuss further plans and coordinating with other groups and everything, such as Extinction Rebellion and Generation Zero. But yeah, we also coordinated several other smaller scale actions in terms of we did a Barnes Dance crossing in the lead up to the final strike, just to help raise awareness, and several other smaller demonstrations surrounding that.
So you mentioned that it was 5 year 13s.
Four.
Okay, so what's... Do you have, like, a continuity plan? Who's taking up the mantle next year, or...?
Yeah, we're currently in the process of getting all of that sorted. There is currently quite a big restructuring of School Strike for Climate on a national scale. So we're all coordinating and making sure that that goes through. It's kind of a downtime right now with the holidays and everything. We are in the process of getting that set up, and we do have a few people that we're connecting with and who are keen to take the reins, at least in Dunedin, for sure.
Well, that's fantastic. And who... So you guys, obviously, you're 13s, you're leaving school soon.
Yeah.
So what are your plans? So do you have a plan of moving into Gen Zero, or are you still going to be under the banner of School Strike?
Well, personally for me, I'm planning on taking a bit more of a step back from School Strike this year, letting the newer generations take the reins on that one. I have recently, over the past year, been quite involved with Extinction Rebellion and their movement. There's a lot of really good grassroots movements within Dunedin that are definitely that I've been kind of dabbling in, and that I definitely want to be more so involved in the next year and further. Yeah.
And how much support did the schools give you? I mean, you know, how much support does teachers give you individually, or do the schools actually support you?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we got very mixed responses from a lot of schools. From our own school, Logan Park High School, they were incredibly supportive. And
of course they are.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Troublemaker.
So that was super helpful. That just made things easy and a lot more fluid. But just reaching out and connecting with other schools, which we did try to do on numerous occasions, it was quite difficult. We definitely did get showings from quite a few schools. I couldn't name any off the top of my head. It was...
So when they responded negatively, what kind of negative responses were they giving you? Was it coherent, or is it...
I mean, I guess there might have been a couple negative responses, but mostly it was just no response whatsoever. It was just kind of a blank. We did get an email sent out by the secondary school coordinator to all of the schools, so they were very much aware of it. And there was quite a few Enviro clubs that were aware of it through the Enviro schools coordinators. And so we did get some showings from those schools, but it definitely could be bigger. It's kind of ironic, given the fact that climate change is now going to be featured on the agenda for NCEA and everything. I definitely think that principals could wake up a little bit more in terms of that.
Do you happen to know the numbers that you got?
With the last strike on September 27th, we achieved estimates went to around 9,000 people. And that was an intergenerational strike. So yeah, that mass number of people, that was huge, and that was fantastic. And on a national level, we achieved around 170,000 people within New Zealand, which is actually 3.5% of the New Zealand population. And that number has been deemed to be the number for a successful non-violent essential revolution. If we achieve 3.5% on a global scale, then we can stand definitely more of a chance.
Now, there was 9,000 here in Dunedin, and out of a population of 125,000 roughly. That's nearly, well, what's that? That's 8% of the population, roughly? Roughly?
You keep talking and I shall work it out.
So we'll work it out, which is... Forgot my password. Really, really big. I mean, that's a huge number. Mm-hmm. Is there something particular about Dunedin? Was it like, did you have a very active group in the Dunedin schools helping you out? Or
I think the four of us were definitely pushing pretty hard all year. It was definitely quite ongoing with that, just in terms of promoting the strike and coordinating with other movements, like I mentioned before, Extinction Rebellion and Generation Zero and so forth. I think that having that really strong connected network of groups really helped, because from there, like, we could branch out and try to reach other communities, whether it be through postering or just talking to people was like the main thing of spreading the word, and through social media as well, for sure. Many nights spent on admin for quite a few hours, but...
So what's the percentage?
7.2.
7.2, okay. Mm-hmm. That's still pretty impressive.
For sure, yeah.
My maths isn't that impressive, but...
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
Can you remember the first time you were aware that climate change was a thing?
I don't think that I could actually pick out, honestly, a specific time. I think for me, the process of realization and everything has been super gradual, because I've been involved in protest movements throughout quite a bit of my life. It was just the way my parents kind of raised me in that kind of light. So they were pretty conscious about that. And yeah, I guess definitely over the past year, I have become way more aware of the growing crisis, for sure. I mean, that's good. I definitely think that is a good thing, and everyone should have that level of awareness. But at the same time, it does definitely take a toll. But it's good to have so many solid support network, at least within Dunedin.
What were the organizers of the climate strikes trying to achieve?
Do you mean the organizers in terms of on a national scale?
Well, I can only really expect you to talk about Dunedin, I suppose. In Dunedin, what were you what were you hoping to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, we have several key demands, including the end of all fossil fuel exploration, the investment in a green, renewable, and regenerative economy through renewable energy such as wind, solar, hydroelectric. And the transition in terms of more equitable solutions for both Indigenous communities and Pacifica communities, which are actually on the front lines of the climate crisis in terms of major floodings. So having the having the New Zealand government have a much stronger stance on that would definitely be a good thing. These key demands, as well as the government declaring a climate emergency, which it still somehow refuses to do, despite this being quite a clear emergency situation. There was, in terms of, I guess, my personal transformation over that period, though, did make me realize that these demands are crucial, but they're only the beginning first steps, and this is really only laying the foundation. And in reality, we need to act and we need to change a lot faster, because how we're doing it now isn't cutting it, just in terms of the Zero Carbon Act, which was just released a couple of months ago. That is a great first step, but it doesn't. It definitely doesn't cut it for the year 2050 to get to carbon neutrality. It's not good enough as it stands.
In terms of the personal transformation and the system change, you got any idea where the balance should be?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, for me anyway, I can only speak for myself, but the personal transformation in terms of my own lifestyle choices has been more of a mentality change, because I'm perfectly aware that that level of change isn't going to solve the climate crisis. Even if everyone decided to go vegan or drive less or all of these things to reduce their own carbon footprint, which I'm not saying these things aren't a bad idea. These things are super important, and I've tried to reduce my own carbon footprint over the past year or so. But what I am saying is that these kind of individualistic changes aren't good enough, and we need to see massive change on a systemic level, which the industrial fossil fuel industry is currently rooted in, because in reality 70% of all greenhouse gases are produced by around 100 companies, which is a shocking number, or a shocking percentage, I should say.
Do you think that there is anybody, again, in Dunedin, who is actively opposed to what you're doing? Not just, oh, whatever, kids, but like taking that up a step?
Yeah, I mean, I I did have a little bit of a situation, or just a bit of a drama on Dunedin News, in terms of I was advertising the September 27th school strike, and I did, much to my disappointment, I did find that there is a lot of climate deniers still within Dunedin, and a lot of people who have a lot of hate towards the movement. And I initially did find it amusing at first, but it did end up getting a little bit personal and a little bit hurtful. I think that really isn't productive, especially since climate change has been deemed by a lot of people as a political issue, whereas in reality it really shouldn't be. It's a scientific proven fact, and it would be so much easier if everyone could understand that and become informed, and then we can move forward from there and to discover solutions of how we can fix this. Because right now there's quite a bit of a counterbalance to that.
But do you think those people will respond to more facts? There's pretty strong facts already.
Yeah.
What's it going to take? Or perhaps we don't need to change their minds.
I mean, to be honest, I think that, I mean, of course, everyone is entitled to their own opinion, and I respect that. And I think that at this late stage, we have to push on regardless. I think if we had a generational shift in terms of better educations from maybe back to the 80s and the 70s when we first discovered the truth of climate change, which was proceeded to be covered up at the time by the fossil fuel industry, I think we would have a different situation in terms of the higher levels of education and information. But I think in reality, we don't really have the time to be discussing it any further in terms of whether or not climate change exists. I think we have to push on regardless, and there's always going to be discontent, and there's always going to be people who say, no, this is a terrible idea, but it's just how it is at this stage.
Did you get any positive feedback from people, any politicians or any political leaders or any community leaders? Mm-hmm. So we've heard about the negative, you know, there's always some goon trolling on Facebook. I mean,
yeah,
we can ignore them, but what about positive feedback? Did any of that happen?
A positive that did come out of my experience with Dunedin News, which I have since proceeded to leave. But I did get quite a bit of support from mayoral candidates and people, our current mayor Aaron Harkins and so forth. That was super helpful, and but at the same time, I mean, honestly, because a lot of politicians now are saying how, yeah, you guys are doing such a great job and everything, and we wish we could have done something and so forth. But those words really don't help the situation. And in reality, what they could be doing in their current position is pushing policy forward that can actually create solutions. I know in terms of local communities and so forth, and just in terms of city councils, they don't have a lot of authorization to act on too much. But still, I mean, there's definitely measures that they could take in terms of reforming the public transport system and making that a lot more accessible to people. So, yeah.
Do you feel angry that you have to actually, you're having to take action and not the adults in the room?
Yeah, definitely. It's a cause of a lot of frustration for me and like many of us, because we don't want to be skipping school and we don't want to be out on the streets advocating for change and so forth. But still, we feel like we have to. We feel like we have like a moral obligation, because I mean, if it's essentially, if it's not us, who else is gonna, like, from what it seems, there's no huge public outcry. I mean, there is Extinction Rebellion has been doing a great job in terms of their movement and their protests and stuff. I do think School Strike for Climate has really galvanized support within a lot of people and within a lot of the public area. But personally, I think even that, it's not moving fast enough, and we need radical change, essentially, at this stage.
So I just want to kind of talk a little bit about how, you know, young people feel at school. I mean, how do your contemporaries, your colleagues at school, feel about this? I mean, are they, you know, I know you're angry and frustrated. Mm-hmm. Frustrated,
yeah,
is the word you used. How do other students feel about this? What's the sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's varied quite a lot. I definitely think it has changed over the course of a year, just talking to peers and people who initially maybe didn't know too much about it, but now I feel like they definitely have a greater grasp on the issue of climate change. At least within my own friend group, there is quite a lot of angst and there is quite a lot of frustration. There's definitely still people who don't agree and don't think that climate change is, or maybe not that they don't think it's an issue, but they don't think that we should be doing anything about it per se as young people. I would disagree with that. I would say that we have to stand up for what we believe in, because we are the future generation. This is a thing that's the other thing, though. It's not about belief. It's about the science, and we're backing the science and we're pushing that. It's definitely a difficult one. There's a lot of mixed responses from people at school, for sure. But yeah,
You talked about it being included in the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's imagine that's in NCEA.
Mm-hmm.
How would you see that? How would you like to see that playing out? What would a good school like Logan Park do to really run with that?
Yeah, well, I think education is a huge factor in terms of just generally being able to understand the situation of the climate crisis, because it is reasonably complex. Like, you do need to, there's a few things to understand about it, which has led to a lot of misinformation about it. and a lot of disinformation about it, especially in the post-truth era that we're currently in. So I think having a really strong education in terms of that area is super important. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of NCEA, having been through it myself.
You did all right, though.
I did my best, but it is a very flawed system, and I definitely think that there are changes that could definitely be made to that, and yeah, especially in terms of including a climate change curriculum, which lays down the foundations and the groundwork. It not necessarily tells people what they should think or what they should do, but just tells them what the facts are. And I think I have hope that people from there can see the situation for what it really is and go from there and say, hey, this is a real problem and we need to address it.
But as you said before, it's not really a science problem anymore. The science is pretty much solved. There's a few little bits around the edges of the details of some predictions, but
yeah,
it's pretty solved. It's a people problem.
Yeah.
And there's the base problem or base solution is we need to consume less. So you said we need to step back and maybe perhaps not tell people what they should do, but maybe we do need to tell people what they should do.
Well, yeah, it's a tricky one. There's a lot of approaches that could be taken, but I think the situation with the education, I think that it is important, but like I said before, it should have really been started years and years and years ago. And I think what we need now is mass mobilization of people on mass numbers. And to get that mass mobilization, we need public consensus. And through that, if people become more informed about the situation and they read up on it and they become interested in it and interested in finding solutions, I think that we can create some real radical change that way. In terms of the kind of consumer lifestyle, it's definitely a tricky one because, I mean, essentially what we're up against is not individuals, because that's an important thing. There has been a lot of blame placed upon the individual and a lot of blame shifting, not just by the fossil fuel industry, but even by our own government. For example, the New Zealand government released an ad earlier this year saying how we can all do a bit in terms of planting a tree, doing some recycling of this kind of thing. And like I said before, that's great. But what it's really doing is just shifting the blame of the climate crisis onto people, so people feel helpless in that situation. Like, they feel like, okay, I can do this and this, but what's that actually doing?
So in some perverse way, is that some great victory by the fossil fuel companies of making you feel guilty?
Yeah, I'd say it is. And I'm saddened to see even the own New Zealand government kind of backing that to some extent, at least.
But in terms of that mass mobilization, maybe we don't need to convince everybody.
Mm.
Maybe we just need to get on with having a better life.
Mm.
You bought an electric bike.
I did, yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's a fantastic mode of transport. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, great substitute for a car. My best investment by far.
So, should we be celebrating that?
I don't think there's, to be honest, not to bring the mood down or anything, but I don't think there's any cause for celebration as things currently stand. I mean, just the state of the world with the Australian bushfires, which burned around 16 million hectares already. And in comparison, that the Amazonian rainforest, which became vile for its burning, that was around 1 million hectares. And just seeing more and more unprecedented extreme weather events and more politicians coming into power who are climate deniers and who aren't prepared to enact proper policy to address the issue. It's caused me, I think, individually to think that this this is something that can't be solved. Not only can it not be solved through our consumer choices, but it can't be solved through participation within the status quo and within our democracy, but actually it needs to be solved through massive public upheaval and putting the power into the hands of the people and then having essentially a revolution on a global scale is what it really comes down to at this stage.
Hey, that's a big step up from taxes and carbon offsets.
Yeah, for sure, it is. But I think that is the necessary call to action at this stage, because we are facing a crisis on a global scale. Arguably, the biggest crisis we have ever faced as a species. And this transcends politics, it transcends race, it transcends religion. And it's indiscriminate of all people. That being said, also, it disproportionately affects communities, like as mentioned before, Indigenous communities and Pacifica communities, and people in lower economic statuses, in terms of flooding and coastal erosion and all of these effects, which a lot of people are failing to realize. Yeah.
When you talk about revolution, do you mean like a proper revolution or some sort of quiet changing of the guard behind the scenes?
I don't think it can be quiet at this stage. I think it needs to be a proper full-scale revolution. And when I say revolution, I mean revolution of all aspects of life. So people coming from it from their own different angles and their different perspectives, but all tackling the heart of the issue in terms of industrial capitalism, which has essentially caused this major crisis. I do think that there needs to be major reform. When I say revolution, I imagine there's quite a lot of preconceptions about that word. And people think, I don't want to get super involved with that. And that's fine. I mean, everyone can participate to their own ability and their own and what they're capable of or what they're comfortable with. Just in terms of traffic light system, which is used by a lot of civil disobedience movements, in terms of like green being essentially that you don't want to be on the front lines of it, and but you're prepared to support people physically and emotionally. Yellow being that you're prepared to say blockade a road or a street and participate in non-violent civil disobedience. And red being essentially you're prepared to be arrested and stand up in that way. There's definitely levels of involvement in that way. But I think the way that we reach this is definitely through people waking up and through people realizing the magnitude of the situation. And then if we can get those numbers, then yeah.
So you sound like you've had long conversations about this.
Mm.
Is there how strong is the feeling around that? How organized are you? I mean, do you have mm-hmm. plans for this coming year? Mm-hmm. And for people outside of New Zealand and Australia, this is the start of the new academic year, mm-hmm. which is kind of halfway through, of course,
yeah,
European, sure. Northern
yeah, yeah.
sector. So for this coming academic year, are there plans for more strikes and more action? Mm-hmm. And is it just going to be marching, or are you going to start taking, have you thought about what kind of actions you're going to take?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said before, it's a little bit of a down period right now. We have been thinking quite a bit about it. And I think the direction of school strike, I won't say that I'm speaking for them right now, but I think in terms of how we've shifted the Overton window towards the left, I think in terms of galvanizing support and public awareness, and I think we're in a really strong position to act from here and to continue to push more radical policy and more radical change. I'm personally in favor of tackling the crisis from every possible angle. So that's in terms of tackling it from changing the system from outside, from just everyday people, or as well as changing it from within. And in terms of the next coming years, I mean, we've seen movements start up across the world, and revolutions. In terms of, if you look at Hong Kong, that is a really dire state of affairs there, but that is something which the people have come to realization in terms of a key issue, and that they've acted upon, and they've acted upon in numbers, and that is really having some noticeable impacts. So yeah, it's just interesting to watch these things and to become more aware, and hopefully to increase. Yeah.
So Greta Thunberg she's in Davos now, I think, is she? Yeah. So she gave her address there, and has anyone been invited to speak here to politicians from your organization?
In terms of just in Dunedin?
Just in the same way. So Davos. So yeah. I think it's perfectly cynical of them, and they're not going to do anything. They just want. They're just. It's a bit of greenwashing for them, as far as I'm concerned. But has anyone in positions of power here in New Zealand asked for you to come to them and talk to them about what you think? And
no, not really, not that I'm aware of.
And say it did happen, who would you want to invite you to speak? Say you just said, oh, Zach, I'm going to invite you over. Who do you want to do that?
Who would
you want invite?
Do you mean who would he want in the room?
Who would you want to talk to? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
God. We got there
in the end. Oh my gosh.
I guess I haven't really thought of it too much, because it just hasn't really happened at all within New Zealand. But I reckon the Prime Minister would be a good start. But yeah, I'm not saying that I specifically would want to speak with her, but I reckon maybe a group of individuals from School Strike, but not just from School Strike, but representing other organizations and indigenous communities and so forth, to have a sit down and a discussion with her, because ultimately, yeah, things do need to change quite rapidly. And right now, our government currently hasn't really had much of an input and much of many radical policies and change. There definitely is people within government trying to change things, but it's not happening quickly enough, and mostly it's just school strike has been used quite a lot recently as a PA stunt for a lot of politicians just to feed off.
But while this lot's not radical enough, the other lot's actively going in the other direction.
Yeah, that is a point for sure.
But do you have to, does School Strike for Climate have to sort of somehow maintain a political neutrality?
Yes, there actually is, I don't think I can speak to that too much, because there is quite a few discussions currently happening within School Strike about being nonpartisan or becoming more politically affiliated. So yeah, within School Strike, I can't really answer that right now. But yeah, I do think that we do need to have a much stronger stance, and we need to continue to build momentum whilst radicalizing further, because yeah, it's not cutting it as it stands.
Okay, we've got a standard set of questions to end with. Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
A go-to definition of sustainability. It's a difficult one just off the top of my head. I'd say that it really comes down to looking at the planet we have and seeing how we can maintain the environment and not be essentially like a plague and a virus upon it, but actually live in harmony with it. And have a balance within the ecosystem rather than destroying the ecosystems, the natural ecosystems that exist on the planet. Yeah.
That's a good answer.
It is a good answer, yes. Much better than many we've had.
What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I reckon it's got to be School Strike for Climate in terms of the major support we've galvanized. I've spoken quite a bit about the negative aspects, but at the same time, we have created an immense movement, and I think that movement will continue to flourish and grow. So, yeah.
I tell you what I'm the most pleased about. It's not the numbers that you got in the second and third march.
Mm.
It was the numbers you got in the first march, which was mm-hmm. still big at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just so grateful that that happened mm-hmm. because as you know, but other people might not remember, later that afternoon was the massacre in Christchurch.
Yep.
And it would have been even worse if there hadn't been that lunchtime of positive and you know, this is the future.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was a really important sort of moment to mm-hmm. have that contradiction. It's not the right term, but the those two things together
mm-hmm.
somehow had an impact. Well, it did on me anyway.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It was definitely an emotional roller coaster that day, for sure. Yeah,
I went to a funeral between the two. It was even worse.
Oh, no.
So we're writing a book of these conversations. We're calling it Tomorrow's Heroes. So you're in the mansion.
Okay.
You're on the team for good. What's your superpower? What's got you there?
I'd probably have to say using my voice just as a young person. And there's quite a few people who say, go back to school and all of that. But at the same time, there is a lot of people who are listening to what we have to say. And politicians are listening. I think the voice is a powerful weapon that can be used for good. Just as it can be used for evil, and to spread hate. But at the same time, if you can use it, for positive aspects and to, promote the health and well-being of the planet, then yeah, I'd put that down as my superpower, I suppose.
Do you think it's really important that you find yourself a career where that you're able to use that voice? You've got to do law and politics mm-hmm. for a while. You've been talked about being an environmental journalist.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It's very much in that making a difference through that communication.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think that through communication we can actually create some meaningful change through that way. Through all aspects, so as I said before, each according to their ability. But yeah, I definitely think that through the voice we can make some powerful change.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yes.
What colour is your traffic light?
Red, at this stage.
Sure.
Yeah, at the current moment I'm in, it hasn't always been, and yeah, but I'm feeling pretty fed up at the moment.
But you're having fun being 17, 18?
Yeah, 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 for sure. I mean, yeah, it's definitely broken up between moments of very clear happiness, but it is quite rough at times.
So what motivates you?
I suppose it would just be a moral obligation, essentially, that we have to do something. In terms of what gets me up in the morning and so forth, just the thought that, in maybe 50 odd years' time, like just looking back to that and thinking, there's a degree of like helplessness, but at the same time, like we have to try, at least we have to give it our best shot, and
There was a Greenpeace ad which was probably on before you were born, and it was in some it was shot overly lit, so it was on a sort of a beach and it was very like whited out,
mm-hmm.
and it was a boy with his granddad, and it sort of said, what did you do What did you do to stop it happening, Granddad?
Mm-hmm.
Are we doing enough?
As it currently stands?
Yeah.
No. No. Definitely not enough.
if you could wave a magic wand and have a miracle occur so that that advert was going to be remade and the granddad's able to say, yeah, I'm glad we did that. What's the thing? What do we need to... Is there a... I don't want it to become like what's the silver bullet, but is there something that would make a really big impact?
In terms of now or back then?
Now.
Now.
I can ask about superpowers. I can't ask about time travel.
Yeah. It would be great if we did have that capability. But I think now... well, I mean, a revolution, essentially. That's what I advocate for. But just in terms of people waking up a bit more and electing leaders of government that aren't pushing hateful policies and aren't aiming to further destroy our ecosystem... just by means of profit and corporate greed and corruption, essentially, as the way things are now. So people, yeah, because right now we're living quite in an era of fear, and people are scared, and people are, like, afraid that they're going to be blamed, I suppose, and that comes back to the whole greenwashing and the blame shifting and everything. So there is a lot of... there is that growth of the alt-right, which... has been birthed essentially out of the feeling for the need of security in that way. So just opening people's minds a bit more and just informing people, and yeah, that's the best way you can definitely move forward for that.
So what challenge are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
Well, I mean,
surviving first year law.
Yeah. There's definitely the challenge of academia for sure to get through. Yeah, and
they don't like it if you
forward.
Stand up in front of a class of 600 people and start arguing back with them, though.
For sure, but I definitely think there's always got to have to be that that voice and that argument.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Get informed, vote, become more politically conscious and aware, and. If you feel comfortable, participate in a demonstration, a civil disobedience, a direct action, as these are great ways to be heard and to use your voice in powerful ways.
And you can tell I don't normally drive this because I've managed to end 4 minutes early. So let's go back to another question.
Yeah.
It was important in the last climate strike march. Lots of the talks were about indigenous... rights.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the link?
Well, the main link is, I mean, what School Strike for Climate advocates for anyway is climate justice. So that's not just climate action, because the issue of the climate crisis is that it's such a holistic problem. So it incorporates every aspect of our lives and every person. So that includes indigenous rights. It includes human rights, environmental rights, obviously, animal rights, and furthermore. So with the link to indigenous rights, I mean, indigenous communities are on the front lines of the climate crisis. And they definitely need to have their voices heard more so than others in terms of equity, because that is directly affecting their lives. Just having that link clearly established and bringing that forward for discussion is definitely an aim of School Strike for Climate and many other organizations alike.
Thank you very much for that. Shane, do you want to drive the last bit?
Yeah, so this is the show for Thursday, the 23rd of January 2020. Our guest was Zach...
Rudin,
I can't remember his surname. And our hosts were Samuel Mann tonight, and I was helping out on the spare speaker, Shane Gallagher. So thank you for our show, and we'll see you next week.
We're also interested in this. I mean... those are the two reasons.
Nope, I can't put that up. Let's carry on talking for another minute, shall we,
okay.
Shane?
Is
Yep, let's keep going.
Just keep going. Okay, cool. Okay,
and because there's no music on this other on the thing talking.
Oh, no,
there's
that's
people
not good.
Talking, so I can't just fade into other people
okay,
talking.
Fade into music. All right. Okay. So, one of the really interesting things. How much of an inspiration was Greta to you?
Oh, she's a huge inspiration to us all, I think. Just the way she speaks, just how she puts it so simply, and how she says that she doesn't want people to listen to her per se, she wants people to listen to the science, and she's just using her voice as a powerful tool to get that message across. She's been an inspirational leader in that regard.
But she doesn't seek leadership. Is that quality about her? You know, there's a quality about her. What is it?
She's very humble, of course. But she's, I guess in terms of school strike and a lot of other movements and a lot of other people have said how we need decentralization of power. So we don't need more hierarchies that will just build upon this corporate capitalism. And so I think that she's quite conscious of that, and she... I can't make these assumptions for her, but yeah, just in terms of the way she speaks. Just that essence of leadership, it's not really important to us, essentially. We just want to make our voices heard.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, let's try again to fade out and see what happens this time.
All right.
Nope, they're still talking. We can keep going.
We can still talking. So... When Greta was traveling across the world and inspiring these strikes, I mean, have you felt finding your voice? I mean, she's got her voice. Mm-hmm. How important is it for you to find your voice and mm-hmm. to talk?
That's definitely it's super important. Just in terms of Greta, she definitely has influenced us. It's important to make the distinction, though, that she's not overseeing the operations of School Strike for Climate or anything.
I mean, there isn't Soros. You know,
there's not a centralized
conspiracy.
No,
there is. Of course not, Platt. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So she started the Fridays for Future movement by striking every Friday outside the Swedish Parliament. That just has inspired us. But just back to the whole decentralization of power. That's essentially how these movements can function so well. Because we're not like held down so much by the bureaucracy of hierarchies and this idea, this kind of deified idea of leadership almost.
All right. let's hope they've gone away this time. Yes, Henry, that's very smooth. Let's go.
Professor Paul Stateski.
Oh, for goodness sake, it's me too.
It is you, actually.
Why is it still running?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. That's very strange. And maybe they're running the old show of ours.
I think they must be. Late.
That's no good at all.
So we just got to keep talking until we're brave talking. Enough to try it again. Let's try it again.
Etotago Polytechnic has made a commitment to sustainability in all that we do. High quality, hands-on education is our trademark, and it's delivered with a focus on sustainable practice. We even have a school dedicated to it, our Centre for Sustainable Practice. For more information, check out our website, otagopolytechnic.ac.nz. A bright future is a sustainable future. Otago Polytechnic, proud sponsor of Sustainable Lens.
Take ORFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and streaming of primo local content. Download the accessmedia.nz app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.